In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Get Rich Slow Club podcast is a collaboration between Tash Etchman from Tash Invest and Anna Christina from Perla. The Get Rich Slow Club acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we record on. From coast to coast, across land, waters, and communities, we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Any advice is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you.
Welcome to the Get Rich Slow Club podcast,
where we take you from beginner to confident investor,
where we can teach you everything you need to know about investing.
So come get rich slow with us. Victoria Harris has over 10 years of experience in the investing and finance industry and is passionate about empowering women to build confidence in their finances. Sophie Hallwright worked as a producer for 10 years and decided to leave her company to pursue making content with a purpose around financial literacy.
They both founded The Curve, which is a platform for women to learn more about money, and we're really excited to have them on today.
So we're very excited to kick it off. Before we do, we always share our money wins and losses. Who wants to take it from here? Victoria, how about you?
Okay. Yeah. No worries. My money win would have to be... So I made kind of a pact this year that I am not getting my nails done because I used to get them done every couple of weeks, and I just can't afford it right now. So I was like, you know what? I'm not getting my nails done. And then bless his heart, my boyfriend was like, for Valentine's Day, he's like, I know you love getting your nails done and you can't afford it right now, so I'm going to pay for it for you. So I got my nails done for free. So that's a bit of a money win for me, is that nothing tastes better than sitting there getting your nails done for free. I was like, this is great. So yeah. And my hands look great. So yeah, that's my money win for the week.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Sophie, what about you?
So I caught up with a friend who I used to work with in the media industry, and she is the most generous person in the entire world. And this is kind of a weird money win, but I went and met up with her for a drink, and she'd just broken up with her boyfriend. And I was like, oh my God, I can do something really great here. So it was like a money win, not really something that helped my bank account. But she was sitting there. I was like, should we get a bottle of Prosecco? She was like, okay. She's like, just put it on the tab. And I was like, yeah, as if I'm going to do that. And then I just went in secretly and paid for this bottle of Prosecco. And she was so stoked. And honestly, I was just like, that is a money win for me because I feel so good spending that $80 on somebody else. Like, it was definitely not in my budget and it was not part of the plan, but I don't know, it just felt kind of good to, often I'm spending money at the moment and I'm like feeling guilty immediately afterwards, whereas with that I was like, oh, there's no money better spent.
I love that so both of it. Yours are generous ones, you know, like someone did something lovely for someone else, and that's a huge win. Tash, what about you?
I went to the Lifeline Book Fair on the weekend and I bought 31 books, which is very exciting. Yeah, I like to read a lot anyway, but they were all between like $4 and $5 each, and there were so many of them, so I got a bit excited.
Yeah. How many
I've
did you read?
I've read two of them already. I've read two so far, and it's only Thursday.
How many books would you read a month?
I read 80 last year.
Oh my God, I read nine, and I've told everyone about it. I was like, I read 9 books. Oh my gosh.
What books did you read though?
Some good ones.
Nonfiction learning ones.
Yeah. No, do you know what? The reason I stopped reading in the first place was because I started getting way too deep down the self-help kind of money books. And I just found it, I'd read two pages and fall asleep. And it wasn't any form of escapism or creativity. So I was like, I'm going to switch and just start reading fiction. And I've just read the most beautiful stories and just like gobble them up. But my gobble them up is like, you know, a 6-week stint, not a 3-day stint.
Yeah. What's your favorite book so far?
Oh, I loved It Ends With Us.
Oh, yes.
Have you read that? I loved that. Yeah. Hello, Beautiful, I really liked.
Oh, I think I've read that one as well.
Oh, God, here we go. The Alchemist, big fan. I read that every year.
I haven't read that.
Okay, that's like a spiritual must. You've got to read it.
Okay.
What else is – oh, and also what's that? Honeybee, I think, was one of the best books I read last year.
That's one of the ones I bought, so that's on my list for next.
It's beautiful. Like, it's a really scary, sad, but also incredibly eye-opening novel about transgender and mental health. And it was, yeah, I loved it.
Okay, awesome. All the book recommendations, I love it.
Sophie and I have very different library bookshelves, I would say, if we had them in our house.
She's like, what do you have to read?
How to nail my habits.
Yeah. Mine's definitely nonfiction, like Atomic Habits.
Same.
Psychology of Money. I'm just reading one at the moment, Buying Happiness. And
oh, yeah. By Kate.
Yeah. And then just finished Diary of a CEO. Yeah. I'm very much.
Okay. I did like Diary of a CEO. That one was good. But usually I like more psychological thrillers, all the fun stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Victoria, I'm like you as well. I listen to them more now. Now that I've got kiddos, it's like too hard to sit down and read. So I listen to all the nonfiction books. My Money Win is also a generous one. So going back to the Money Wins, so it was my birthday last week and I had
Happy
friends
birthday.
That wanted to, thank you. I had friends swing by to pick up some like hand-me-down baby stuff because that's what you do. Don't buy anything firsthand from babies. And they came over and my partner's like, hey, do you guys want some cake? And they're like, what kind of cake? Like, why? And they're like, oh, it's Anna's birthday. And they're like, what? And then they're like, yeah, it's her 40th, which is like a big number. And they were like, you mean we came over on your birthday without knowing it was your birthday? And anyways, it wasn't a big deal. But that night, my partner and I, we went out. We went to this restaurant. And when we rocked up at the restaurant, the server said, hey, your first two cocktails are free. Your friends paid for your first two cocktails. So it was just like this magical moment where, you know, obviously I didn't expect anything, but it just made it like it set the tone for the evening. So I think those little generous things, made me feel loved. So
I love that.
I love it when people are thoughtful like that. It's such a little thing that makes such a big, nice feeling for you. It's
especially something like cocktails as well that are a little bit more expensive and you're like, oh, I don't know if I'll buy them, and you get two for free. That's a big win.
It's like giving, feels special.
I was gonna say, it's like giving someone something that they want, not what they need, you know, like a nail voucher. You just want
the Prosecco.
Which I think is even nicer to get in a gift form because you're like, thanks, because I might not have spent that money on myself.
Yeah. You enjoy it more. Okay, well, let's jump into the podcast and ask some of our burning questions. So we're excited. This is the first time we've had four people on the podcast. And the great thing about both of you is that you have such different backgrounds. One is in finance, which is Victoria, and the other is more about content and producing, which is Sophie. How did you guys manage to find a common ground to talk about money and basically start the curve?
Do you want me to take this one?
I was going to say, do you want the true story or like the funner story?
the fun story.
Well, technically an ex-boyfriend, right?
Yeah, we were actually driving. We're stuck in traffic coming back from New Year's. It was me, Sophie, and my ex-boyfriend. And we were kind of probably a bit delirious from the traffic and, you know, a bit hungover from New Year's Eve. And we started talking about the lack of women that know about investing in finance and then my background and then Sophie's background. And we were like, oh my God, but why don't we start something?
It was also like quite funny because I remember you were kind of shitty at your boyfriend at the time and it was like weird vibes, you know? And I remember he was like, hello, this is a business idea. And I was like sitting in the back and I was like, excuse me. I mean, perfect candidate to make this happen.
Like I actually I remember that. I remember in my head being like, I know this is a good idea, but I don't want to give him the satisfaction of. So you're trying to be like, yeah, okay, okay, I'll think about it. Anyway, and then I think it was a few months later, I was in between jobs, had like 3 months off, and it was kind of like a now or never kind of thing. And so Sophie and I sat down, we started producing literally social media tiles on Instagram, being like, what is a stock? What is compound interest? And to be honest, it wasn't really resonating. And then, yeah, we started the podcast, and I think that was where we kind of understood, I guess, the need for the conversation, but also how we can best utilize our skill set and have, we're best friends. Let's make that, let's bring that into finance. Let's bring that fun side of it. Let's make it entertaining as well as educational, you know, rather than just a boring Instagram tile about like, what is a stock? Yeah. So, and so bless her heart, is so talented at what she does and couldn't do it without her, and bringing that, she's really good at making the content cut through and actually resonate with people. And then my side is actually coming up with the content. So those combined is like an epic combination, if I say so myself. And yeah.
I also think it's quite funny because my background was in like producing shows. So I worked in like radio and TV and worked on Survivor and like, you know, things like that, which is very story-based, right? And so as soon as, and I remember when we first started the curve and as Vic was saying, like socials were a total plonker, no one was interested. We were like, oh, this is like, people were coming to the events because they wanted to know about it.
Yeah.
But then translating that into digestible, quick, easy, fun content was super hard. And so I remember I just like flicked a switch in my brain and I was like, I'm going to think about this as a show. Like, and how would I communicate? How would this be a two-way conversation? And as soon as we started asking our audience things like, do you talk to your friends about salaries, or who should pay for an engagement ring? Like, should it be the guy? Should we talk about that? People had so much they wanted to share. And I think it was just kind of interesting realizing we don't really have to actually facilitate this conversation. Everyone wants to talk about money and learn about money, and everyone has their own experiences and we can learn so much from each other. And that's, I think, where the curve as a brand really started to come into its own, because we weren't just like preaching at people or being like, this is how you make money. It's very much a collaborative conversation, which I really like.
Mm. And I think in the early days, I realized that I was still explaining things in finance terms, you know, like what is a stock? And I would explain it to Sophie, and Soph doesn't have any financial background, and I've got a lot, but I've been so accustomed to explaining things in a finance way that I thought I was explaining it, but I wasn't. And then she'd be like, oh, well, like we'd be talking about a stock exchange. She'd be like, oh, is that just like a farmer's market where everyone comes together to buy and sell produce? And I was like, oh my God, yes. Why have I been explaining it in such a complicated way for so many years? And I think that's where a lot of platforms or products kind of fall flat when they try to go from the talking to finance or people in the finance world to people outside the finance world, is that it is a different, you know, you do need to speak in a different language. It's like, so it was, yeah, once we figured out that as well, that, and that was kind of on my part of breaking that down and actually talking in everyday terms. It's like, the stuff isn't complicated. It's not hard to learn, and it shouldn't be. And so, yeah, let's get as many people involved as possible.
But I also think, just based on what Vic said, I think the reason that the curve has been successful and the reason in which lots of people are like, oh, thank God, I actually do care about money and I am interested in investing, I just didn't really know how to get into it before, is because we were such good friends, I didn't feel stupid asking again and again and again. Because honestly, like the idea of investing for the long term, I'm like, this is just like telling me that.
What does that even mean?
Which now I understand it. It's so different. But the amount of times that I had to hear that in different ways before it made sense, or before I actually fully could embody what that meant, I think we were just lucky that I didn't feel silly. She didn't make me feel silly for asking questions. And so hopefully now, and like what a lot of our audience have said, is now when someone says something complicated, they're like, could you explain that? Or what does that mean? Because there's no shame in not knowing, and it's actually quite cool to ask questions and learn. So I'd say that's also been kind of a thread of how it came about.
We recorded a podcast the other day and so it was like, we almost got in an argument. So I was like, just tell me the option that's going to make me the most money. And I'm like, no, but I'm giving you the full landscape, the full, background case. And like, everyone's different. And so, you need to assess this and this. And it was quite funny. And then we got there and the penny dropped and she was like, oh, I get it. Okay. And so, but that took a whole like hour, even an hour and a half podcast Yeah, we're not afraid to like get angry at each other either and be like frustrated and like, yeah, it's quite a good dynamic. It's fun.
Yeah. It seems so annoying as well when you're like, just tell me the answer. Please stop talking around it. Surely there's just one answer.
Yeah.
But it's like anything, right? Like sometimes you have to hear it a million times. Sometimes you have to hear it from a different perspective. I know sometimes I'll talk to my partner about something and he'll keep saying the same thing over and over again. And then I'll talk to my bestie who will say it in a completely different way and be like, I had a revelation. And he'll be like, I was saying that. That's what I was saying. And you're like, you just have to hear it from a different way, you know? And because there's so much jargon in finance and everyone's personal situation is so different that hearing these different experiences is so valuable to us because then we can apply the parts to ourselves as well, right? And have a better understanding, whether it's a farmer market or, you know, the stock market, however you kind of connect with it is really valuable, right?
But also like we're sitting here with four women talking about money. That's amazing. Cool. Mm-hmm. And we were speaking at, I always say the wrong one. Was it Cambridge or Oxford, Vic?
Oxford.
Sorry. We were speaking at Oxford and this guy put his hand up and said the similar thing. He's like, I've tried to explain stocks to my daughter. I've tried to. And he was like, I don't know what the problem is. And we were like, look, no offense, but it's because it's coming from you, you know? And because those conversations have been from guys for such a long time, it's really amazing to see so many conversations and people leading the charge who are also representing a different aspect of society. Because just like you talking to your best friend, the penny dropped, but maybe not your husband, it's similar with everything. I think it's if you don't feel represented or like you can relate to the person that's telling you about something, there's like a tune out factor that you just cannot control.
Did you guys talk to each other about money before you started this business? No, never.
No.
Interesting.
We actually started like an anonymous salary spreadsheet that we did. And it was basically on the conversation of salary transparency because we all know now it's important to talk about so that you know people aren't getting like royally effed over by their bosses and blah, blah, blah. But at the time, we now have like hundreds of people that have put their data in. So you can go in and search and see like, oh, interesting. Someone who has 6 hours, like years of design experience earns 65, whatever. But this was a couple of years ago when we first did it. And I remember Vic and I was like, oh, so, but like, what do you earn? And she was like, I don't feel comfortable talking about it. I was like, we're talking about this on the curve. But, like, you know, but then you think about even before the curve, there's no way we were having conversations about that. Like we've both had to really warm up to it.
And I think it's an education piece. I now understand not only the importance of talking about salaries, but why I was so like averse to not talking about, or like I didn't want to talk about it, and why women have been conditioned. And like there was just, I think slowly I've opened this can of worms of like, oh my gosh. And I want to change that narrative. But I think without the curve, I wouldn't have realized, you know, how society or how stereotypes are conditioning us to not talk about money and why that is. And so, yeah, it does take a while to, and we've had people on the podcast who don't want to talk about it. And like it, and I get it. It takes a while to break down those barriers. But yeah, I do remember that. And Soph was like, are you kidding? She's like, the whole reason we're doing this is to, so that people feel comfortable and we're supposed to be leading the charge and you don't even want to put your salary in. And I was like sitting there and I went away and I sat on it. And then I was like, actually, there's no harm that can come from it. And, you know, if something feels uncomfortable, you got to lean into it because there's a reason and it's all about growth. And, you know, uncertainty helps you grow as a person. And so it did take me like 24 hours, but then I didn't end. But we got there.
What was the internal hang up for you? Because I completely understand that. And I think that sometimes when I talk to people that are in different parts of their career or in different industries, sometimes you're like, oh, it's apples and oranges when we're talking about this stuff. So like, it's easy to make, I guess, not excuses, but like reasons why it might not be beneficial to share, for example, salary transparency. What were some of the things that you kind of experienced through, I guess, your discovery in terms of wanting to share?
To be honest, it was the fact that I earned a lot and I thought a lot in comparison to my peers at the time.
Mm-hmm. And what was a lot? Are you happy to share now?
Yeah, I was on about 300,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Before so, bonuses, just need to point that bonus. Out.
Crazy. Yeah, fantastic. That's amazing.
So yeah. I've been in the finance industry for nearly 12 years at that point. And I just felt, I felt like I would be judged. And almost in the flow on of that is that why would I listen to the curve when it seems like she makes a lot of money, she's privileged. You know, like I kind of internally had all these
the unrelatable part to it.
Yeah. And I was like, here I am trying to teach people about money, but I'm unrelatable to them because I've already earning so much that, yeah, it was just like this whole internal dialogue. And then I remember sitting down with a friend and he was like, Vic, why don't you reframe that and be like, yes, you earn a lot and you've got an amazing skill set and you're an expert in your field and you're now using that to help other people. You're putting that money back into the curve to start a business to help educate other women so that they can be in a position like you and or increase their salaries or be better with money. And I was like, oh my God, that's so true. I should think of it in more of a positive mindset rather than a negative. And so, yeah, after that, it was fine. But
I think there's so many things that play into it as well. Like the jealousy thing, you've had experiences with friends that have been like, oh, you can pay for this, right? And you're like, you know, like there's a lot, I think, that needs to be kind
that
of pulled apart.
Since that.
Yeah, because there's the jealousy thing, but then there's also like New Zealand has a huge tall poppy syndrome, which is an actual problem because if someone's doing well or earning lots of money, everyone loves to tear them down. Like it's really, I think there's, it's really hard, I think, to pinpoint one reason as to why for you in particular. But even like the other day, we were recording a podcast and Vic spills the story about she was in the taxi with friends that were on a night out and they like pulled over at everyone's classic being like, oh, just find my card, you know, like pretending they don't want to, you know, oh, I don't have cash or whatever. And someone was like, oh, you earn heaps, you can pay for it. And she was kind of like, oh, is that what people think of me? Do I have to pay for more? You know, like I think there's a lot to it. And it also comes back to us as people to make other people feel like their worth is not wrapped up in how much they earn. And neither is, you know, like we're not, success isn't just financial. And I think that's a real important piece too.
And you never know what people's expenses are, you know, they might.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You don't know how much their mortgage is and childcare or healthcare. Are they looking after their aging parents? There's so many additional things.
Are they
things.
Sick themselves? Like, are they need to have all these operations? Like, it's like judging someone based on their age. It's so irrelevant. There's so many things that make up a person, not just how many birthdays they've had. And I think it's a real like process that I'd say we're still definitely working through. Like we talk about how much we earn now in the curve, which is obviously significantly less than what Vic was earning. But yeah, I don't know. It's practice. I think just the more that you can have these conversations with friends and talk about it or bring up, hey, can we split the bill based on this? Or it's so uncomfortable because you've never done it before. But I think the more that you do it, the easier it gets.
And then I also think, yeah, exactly that. The more you do it, the easier it gets. And now when I talk about like my mortgage and so I was like, well, how much is it? What's the actual dollar figure? And I'm like, I'm a bit like, ugh. But then I'm like, oh, God, okay. I mean, I've spoken about my salary. I've spoken about this. So, you know, this is just like another thing. But I think it's taking that initial like jump of talking about money and putting actual dollar figures next to things that is scary. But then once you do it the first time, you're like, oh, yeah, God, I had a blowout this weekend. You know, I spent $200 on, I don't know.
Tequila, bottles.
Yeah.
I found it really interesting. I used to talk about what I earned a lot on Instagram, but then when I transitioned into doing business stuff and working full time for myself, I felt weirder about saying how much I earn publicly because I feel like people judge that a little bit more and that comes with social media. But it's been an interesting hurdle to get over a little bit and be like, oh no, they won't understand like the expenses that go into it or like the other stuff that goes around it too. So that's been an interesting thing.
What do you mean? Yeah. Sorry. So if you're working, can you explain that again? I actually get how it feels different.
I guess like when you say how much you earn for one Instagram post, someone's like, oh my God, that's so much money for a 30-second video. And they're not seeing all the time and effort that goes into it versus having a job. It's like, I earned this much for this many hours. And I know that I could definitely explain it a little bit more, but I think, I don't know, I'm just worried about the hate a little bit more on social media.
I think there's also, I totally get what you're meaning in terms of the other day, Soph, we're on a podcast and Soph mentioned, you know, she's like, look, the curve doesn't have a lot in its bank account at the moment. You know, like we haven't been able to pay ourselves this month. And internally I was like, oh gosh, like I don't want the bank to hear that or like our contractors or, you know, like there was an internal dialogue of, oh gosh, people aren't going to want to work with us because they'll be scared they won't get paid. But I was like, you know what? That small percentage of if there is haters or if there is people that don't want to work with us, I was like, I'm fine with that considering the, I guess, what it will mean for everyone else, the fact that we're now talking about money. Do you know what I mean? Like it was kind of, there was like a trade-off, but I totally get you. There's definitely people you're like, oh, well, I won't work with the Curve because they've got no money in the bank account or like, you know, there's something. Yeah.
But then it's funny because we were also prefacing it though. Like I think that's what, and this might sound like we're really tooting our own trumpets here, but the whole reason that we were talking about it was because exactly your point, like the more it's talked about, great. But then the secondary part to that is education and putting steps in place. So for us, we're not stressed about our bank account right now because we know what invoices are coming in. I mean, yeah, like there's of course, like any business, we're not like, oh, it's mellow. But we also have emergency funds in place. We have this and this and this set up. And the whole reason we were bringing that up and using it as an example is because you can, in your personal business life, always end up Schitt's Creek. Like it's just life happens. But if you have the education and the tools to navigate that rather than just freaking out and being like, oh gosh, that was kind of the point we were trying to make is like, yeah, we're not sitting here on like 200 grand in our account right now, but we're also feeling like we're in control of the situation. And that's, I think, the difference in the way it's spoken about. It's not just fear mongering. It's also like, how can we learn from it?
Yeah. Yeah.
How much did you have saved before you started the business and quit your jobs?
Oh, good question. I love that.
Good question.
Well, Vic, you knew. So the difference here is that we basically, because what we needed to do was focus on content, I was the one that had to go full-time first. So we started paying me a salary, like as a contractor of about 70,000 New Zealand, which obviously is like a massive drop from what I was earning. And Vic was working for free for the business for like 2.5 years. So she was working full-time and then after working in the weekends, just working. So that was kind of the way we could continue. And then when we got to, Vic basically could put a plan together, right? Like she was like, I want to have 100K saved before I go full time. Maybe you can talk to that. This is your story.
Yeah. No. So yeah, I think so. If you were about a year, you're a year.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
By yourself working full-time every day in the business, which...
Two.
Yeah, bless... 2 years. Okay, 2 years, sorry. She's like, just around it, 2.
Don't forget to call me, mate.
She'd call me and I'd be in a meeting. I'd be like, I can't talk right now. I'm at work.
I'm like but I'm having a crisis. Hello.
Anyway, and then, yeah, so I knew I was like, I want to be self. I want to be in the business. It was my passion. It was like going really well. I was almost jealous of her being able to do it every day. And so I put a plan in place. I gave myself a deadline. I think it was February last year. And I was like, right, I need to have saved $100,000 for my own personal, you know, financial well-being to have that safety net to before I can take the leap and go full time and be on a significantly reduced salary. And so I had a bit more of time on my side, I guess, to plan. Whereas Soph, it was very much like, okay, tomorrow you're going full time. So that was kind of the difference there. But that 100,000 was more, it was almost a buffer of like, okay, and if the Curve doesn't go well, then I've got that safety net. And so, but I haven't had to use it, which is good. And like, it's kind of, yeah.
Is that whole amount still invested?
Oh, I've dipped into a little bit and paid it back. Yeah.
But no, it's still, way.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? You've still got 100 grand.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so jealous of that. Really? How on earth have you done that, earning what we're earning?
I know. It's been, yeah.
She's selling her liver on the side. She had an operation the other day and she was like, having an operation. She's like secretly removing organs to keep up her 100K.
Yes. So that was kind of the difference in the dynamic. But I put money into the business as well, like to pay for things in the initial stages from savings.
Because if we didn't have enough to pay me or someone else, Vic was also having to top that up from her own personal accounts. So there was like a lot of, and we would pay it back, but we were really lucky to have that dynamic. Because if Vic had been full time and we'd both done it, which would have been the dream for me, because it can be really lonely and hard being, I wasn't in it on my own, but like, and also earning so much less, like we were both sacrificing a lot and it was hard on both of us in a lot of ways, but we were also incredibly lucky to be in a situation where, because Vic was earning good money, if we were like, oh God, we need to get this page on our website updated and we can't pay for it right now, Vic could top it up and then we could pay it back, you know? So, but yeah, I think with every business, there's always different stories to that. And like, we're definitely at a point now where it would be really nice to have more investment, to not have to be so worried about the in-goings and out. Like, we have to be quite careful on where we space out our payments for things, all that kind of stuff. And I think from a growth perspective, it would be amazing not to, but that's something we're working through at the moment.
I think there's always so much glamorization that happens with businesses, like you're doing your own business, you're an influencer, you're doing this. But I think to all three of your points, people don't see all of the work and all of the sacrifice that's behind it. You know, I think Tash, to your point where you were saying people thinking about it, one TikTok video costing X amount. I think back to art school, I went to art school, ended up in finance, but like a big thing was like people would paint something, then be like, why is that so expensive? And it's like, because it's taken them years and years and years of expertise to get to where they are so that they can paint it quickly and it's beautiful. But like, you have to take into account all of that work that's behind the scenes that nobody sees. And that's where it's like, I love that you guys are so transparent about your cash flow, how to juggle it, what are the compromises you had to make, the you know, decrease in wages in order to follow through with a passion project that is a business, right?
And I think that's key, is like, if you're passionate about it, you don't mind taking those sacrifices. You don't mind working till midnight. You don't mind, you know, trying to meet deadlines or, you know, working in the weekend or anything like that. It's like giving up a holiday. It's like you're so passionate about it. It doesn't feel like work in a sense.
Can I just counteract that? Because I think you're right, but I also think there's this like false narrative that is sold that like, to find your purpose, you'll never work a day in your life bullshit, which I think is not fair, because it also makes people think that if they're not enjoying every aspect of every day, that they're in the wrong career, or like,
yeah.
If you're doing your own business, you're going to love every second of it. Like, that's not true at all. You know, no, there's still a norm. Yeah. No, yeah. I just wanted to, because I know that's not what you meant, but I just wanted to preface, like, there is so much stress and sacrifice that goes into anything, whether you're in a full-time job or your own business. And it's not just like you start your own thing, even if you love it, and it's like, oh, I'm happy to work till 2 in the morning. Chill. No, no. You know, it's not like, but.
Oh, there's definitely been days where I'm like, I love my job. You know, like you're like, I love it. But in terms of I think there's always a view that the grass is greener, and people that maybe are in full-time job and have to be, I don't know, in an office and accountable to a boss are like, gosh, I wish I could have my own business and do what I want and live my own life and all of that. And then they do that and they're like, oh, I wish I actually want to go back to, you know, there's pluses and minuses of both. Like, I went into the city, into Auckland City for a meeting the other day, and I was like, oh, I kind of miss just like turning up to work, doing my thing, leaving it. It's someone else's problem if shit hits the fan, you know, putting my out of office on, taking a 3-week break, that kind of thing. But then I'm like, no, I wouldn't give that up to go back to that. You know, there's obviously parts of both dynamics that you appreciate and that you don't appreciate. But yeah, if you can have a passion, it helps definitely. And if you do you really love what you do, it can help on the days when it feels
things
like
get hard.
When things are hard, definitely.
Yeah, I have that battle like every second day, being like, oh, I just want a normal job again. But no. I have a burning question though. How much did you get paid working on Survivor, if you're allowed to share?
Oh, absolute peanuts. I think I honestly can't remember what exactly it was, but it was basically an internship wage. So I was based in Fiji for 6 months, and you have your washing, your food's made, your buffet, like every meal, like it's pretty awesome. But then also the downsides are you're sharing a room with four people, you have one day off a week, you're living in Britain. In terms of the payment thing, yeah, it was terrible. But that's because I wasn't like a senior producer or something. So it was reflective of my job title. Yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience. Like I think back to that, and I'm like, holy shit, I can't even believe I did that. But yeah, it definitely was for the love of it. I think most of my jobs in the creative realm have been paid pretty poorly. And I've always sort of thought, oh, I'm never going to really earn much, or my wealth trajectory is never going to be amazing. And I'm not skirting around the question. I genuinely don't remember what I earned. But when I went to Sony Music, which was a couple of jobs after that, I was paid 145 Australian a year, which was like, you know, 6 years ago. So ages. And at the time I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm never earning this money again. Like, this is epic. Holy, you know, and I just remember having this real scarcity mindset though, like, you know, I'm not going to earn that kind of money if I'm really doing the things that I want to do. And it's kind of back to your point, Anna, around even just art or creativity. I've got a real issue with the way in which it's valued comparatively to finance, law, medicine. Of course, if you're cutting someone's heart open, you deserve to be compensated for that risk. But like, I also think there's this really shitty mentality towards anything that's somewhat creative, and it's really undervalued. And so, yeah, it wasn't, I guess, till I stepped out of it that I got that perspective. But I remember being in one of my first producing jobs, and it was like a breakfast radio show. And it was like $25,000 a year.
Just to stop you there, Soph has worked in the top radio stations in New Zealand, Australia, on the top shows like Kiss FM, Kyle and Jackie O Show, The Edge, Breakfast. Like, she downplays herself so much. She's like one of the top producers in New Zealand, just to caveat that.
I love that. I love when your friends have to like go in and be like, hang on, stop downplaying. Yeah. You're actually freaking amazing.
That's really cool. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not compensated from a financial perspective. And I think there's also an element of that in like fashion, in, you know, a lot of different cool industries, because they sort of play it up against, like, anyone would want this job, so take what you've got or leave kind of thing. So, and that happened a lot. And I've seen it a lot in many different creative industries. It's quite shitty.
It's kind of like if you got a quote from a graphic designer, for example, there's the feeling that you can negotiate that. If you get a quote from a lawyer, there's no negotiating on that. Do you know, like, there's this mentality of, oh, it's a creative space, a creative industry, creative job, whatever. I can negotiate on that. And then you would never do that for a professional, you know, a financial services law. Like, yeah, it's just quite a weird mentality. And
even
so,
I do it as well. Like, I'm totally guilty of it. I'm like, why is someone charging $140 an hour to create a poster for me? Like, absurd. But could I do that? Absolutely not. So shut up.
Yeah.
It's also just other biases. I don't know, like, even just gendered biases. I had an electrician do something that was a female electrician. The bill was more than I anticipated. And I was like, I wonder if I can negotiate this. And I was like, why would I have done that with a male electrician? And I just realized that it was just this bias that we pick up, gender biases, industry biases, like all of these things that I was like, why did that even thought cross my mind? I felt so bad about it, right? Because I consider myself a feminist, and you just have these thoughts and you realize you have to like break down these ideas or these biases that come into play.
We had a conversation the other day with this really amazing woman who's an economist, and we were talking about girl math and why it's so problematic. And honestly, Vic and I, like, three times throughout the podcast had to pause and be like, oh my God, we just
catch
did it.
Ourselves.
We were like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, that wasn't, oh God, you know, and it was exactly the same for us. It was these like knee-jerk reactions that I didn't even realize how it was coming across. Like, I think I don't even know if we called her cute, but we said something a lot about like the fact that she's an economist and what that must be like against, I don't know, it was bad. And both of us just kept having to stop and be like, whoa.
Like being a female economist, like something like that to that point. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, how do you, it was about her leadership style or something. And I was like, oh, she was quite senior. And I was like, oh, but like, you don't seem like a typical leader. And then it was like, even that
sounded
comment,
way worse. Yeah. It wasn't that bad.
No, sorry. But like, she was just like, her demeanor was very feminine and like kind. And I was
gentle.
Like, I've associated with leadership as you need to be abrupt. You need to be
aggressive,
strong, aggressive, dominant. And it's like, that's because that's a male, you know, image or persona of a leadership style. And it's like, but even that comment, I was like, oh my God, I was like catching myself. And I was like, gosh, here I am projecting my stereotypes. And yeah. It's scary when you don't notice that you do it.
Because it can happen in anything, right? Like whether it's finance and work, and it kind of relates relates to everything, even if we don't want it to. That's why I think like doing that work for each of us in acknowledging our biases and deconstructing it is only going to make the world a better place. In the same way that we have to do that with, you know, why do we feel financially weird talking about our wages? Why is that uncomfortable? What do I need to impact in myself in order to overcome that and move forward, I guess?
Yeah. We did a best bits of 2023, kind of round out between Soph and I. And one thing that I learned of myself was that of just how many biases and stereotypes I had over the years. And talking to all these amazing women on the podcast, I was like, I am so happy that I do what I do, because I have learned so much about myself and
lived in your own little precious box your whole life without realizing it. No, it's true. Same here.
And I felt guilty. I felt guilty that I hadn't done this earlier or learned this or things that I'd said in my past or And I was like, thank goodness I'm now educating myself as well as the Curve audience and our community. But I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize how much I didn't know, if that makes sense. Yeah. Mm.
It's hard living in a particular bubble as well if you used to work in finance and that's what you're around all the time. Like it's very jarring to go from that and then be like, oh no, what if I learned from that?
Definitely.
But even like we were talking the other day, that got like a Christmas card or something came in the email from like some financial institution, which we will not name, but she was looking at this Christmas card and like the graphics. And it was literally, she said it was every single person looked like that. Just comes straight off the golf course, like white 50-year-old man that's just played golf. And she was like, it's 2024. How on earth is their marketing team so blind to how this is coming across? Or like even just still Googling like investor and it's just men's hands, men's in suits. Like, but this is just the investing space. That's not even looking beyond to gender, racial, like, oh, there's so many different industries and biases. And I think, you know, you can't actually be an expert on all of them. And I get a bit frustrated sometimes because, yeah, I find myself being ignorant about one thing, but then I know about the other. And I'm just grateful for people who have chosen their part of society that they're trying to educate and move the needle on, because you do need people in all of the spaces and really just people that are receptive enough to listen and learn and relearn. Because if you have lived in an echo chamber or a precious little box your whole life like we had, you know, you don't know better, and you sometimes have to apologize for the way in which you behave or things that you've said or thought. But yeah, I think it's just having the grace with yourself and then also with people who might not be there yet. Because I had a conversation, for example, with my sister not that long ago about house deposits, and I wanted to know, you know, what she had and like what her plan was. And she was so cagey with me and I got real frustrated and I was like, oh my God. And it was this whole thing. And I really had to take a step back and be like, you know what? If this was me 6 months ago, a year, I would have reacted in the exact same way, and not being too pushy or judgy on those that maybe aren't quite ready to make changes or enter the conversation, whatever that is, money or any other uncomfortable topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to shuffle from that. I know I had colleagues at my old job who are like, do you want to know my wage? And I sat there for a second. I was like, yeah, I do. And realized that they were paid more than me for doing the same job. Like I was underpaid. And then similarly, there was like a new employee that came on similar role as mine. And I was like, do you want me to share my wage with you? And she said, no. And I was like, interesting. I'm here if you ever want to chat. And it just made me realize like we're all on a different journey. We're learning at a different pace. Money is going to be very different with us. Our biases, our experiences, our privileges. And we just have to be like understanding to that, you know? Mm.
And I also think it's the person's intentions as well. If they're like willing to learn and educate themselves or like I've had in the past, like men be like, what do you earn? You know, like, and I know that's not coming from a place of like, they genuinely want to know or anything. And then I've had other people that are like, hey, Vic, like, just going for a promotion or like, can you tell me what you earn? Just so I know. And I'm like, of course. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's in the context or what's their intention. And if they're actually, some people just don't even want to be taught or educated, and it's okay.
Actually, just on that, we interviewed this really amazing woman called Julia Glum, and she's a writer for money.com, and we released a podcast the other day talking to her about exactly this, like how can you make those conversations less uncomfortable and what are some of the key ingredients to making that a comfortable exchange for both the person sharing and the person receiving that. And it's all things like giving them an out, the way that you preface it, the setting. You don't scream it at a concert when you're in the front row of Beyonce. You know, like there's always your stuff that you've got to keep in mind to give yourself the best possible chance to communicate and that person to accept it in a way that's not jarring. And I found that conversation really, really helpful because before that I'm like, I want to be so open. I want to talk about these things. And then I have all these blowouts conversations. I'm like, why didn't that go very well? I thought I nailed that, but it didn't. And so that conversation for me was quite helpful.
Like, so at the dinner table, and what did you ask?
Okay, for preface. So we've done a blog. We've got this blog series called The Big Share, and it basically allows people to write about their personal situations with money or like, you know, anything. And we've had some amazing things come through. And one of them was this 23-year-old woman who inherited enough debt that by the time she'd paid it off, she could have bought a house in central London. Like it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. Her dad died. She hadn't had a conversation with her dad about the finances. It was a real brush over. Like, is everything fine? Yep, cool, you're fine. And she was just in the worst situation ever. And so I thought her learnings from that, what she shared in the article was like how important it is to know what's going on with your parents when it comes to retirement. Is money given from, you know, grandparents like very clearly stated as a gift or inheritance versus a loan, you know? So anyway, here I was thinking, perfect. I'm going to have a conversation with my mum and my sister and I'm going to open it up. And honestly, I just put my foot in a giant steaming poo and everyone was like, what is this? And it was bad. And I look at it in hindsight and I'm like, I get why that didn't go well. But at the time, I didn't really have it was before this interview with Julia, so I had no tools at all. And I reflected on it and I sent it to my mum before the podcast went out. And I was like, hi, I just want to check that you're fine with me talking about this. She's like, yep, well, you did say it really badly. So
I was like, what did you say? Can you share?
Oh, I was trying to have a conversation about what does your retirement look like? Are you ready to retire? Are you working because you have to be? Like, what kind of lifestyle do you want? And are you going to be able to afford that?
What debt are you in?
Are you in your debt?
So it just came across a bit abrupt.
Are you, has grandma given you anything that was a gift that you haven't written down as a thing and it's going to turn around and she might get dementia and bite us in the ass and make us pay us back? Like, I had a real foot and mouth moment. And my mum got really defensive. My sister was like, what are you talking about? Like, it was really bad. And, Julia
would have
loved
to have been a fly on the wall. It would have been.
Yeah.
The worst part was we were in like the middle of a bush. We were kind of like glamping. It was just, there was nothing right about the situation. There was nothing right about it.
And they couldn't even escape you if you were camping.
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
Here, I've trapped you.
But maybe she'd come at it with like, hey, look, we just did this content series. This girl's article has really concerned me. It's coming from a place of love. I just, you know, like there would have been probably a different reaction, but the thought was there. You know, your heart was in the right place. Execution can work on that.
Like, completely different sets of grandparents. And one is like very abrupt and very open. And they'll be like, I'm not giving you inheritance if you buy shares because I don't like shares. And they'll just openly say that. Yeah. And then the other grandparents just don't want to talk about money at all. It's very taboo. You can't mention anything. And it's interesting, like, framing conversations around things differently for both of them and seeing how that plays out.
I also was speaking to my dad the other day because we interviewed him and Vic's dad for our podcast to be like, what were we like as kids? What was our, what was our relationship with money? Yeah. It was real cute. Mm. We actually haven't released it yet. I'm not sure when this episode's coming up, but we're editing it at the moment. And before the interview, I did a bit of a deep dive with my dad, like what, understanding him and his money story a bit better. And one of the things that he realized that he had never even thought about, he was like, oh, I remember my dad, so my granddad, or like he was really lucky and he went to a private school, but his dad, my granddad, always let him know how expensive it was and how hard he was having to work to send him there and what a stress it was. And it was always a real point of like stress in the family of like, I'm having to work so hard to send you to the school kind of thing. And it's interesting because the way that my dad has been with money with me is very similar. And that kind of scarcity mindset of, holy shit, you bought a watermelon for $12 and it's that size, take it back. You know, it's like this sort of got to really safeguard my pennies. And it was just interesting for him to then reflect and think, shit, this is actually not even my stuff. This is my dad's stuff that I've now given you, and you might have given your kid if you hadn't realized. And yeah, not that I have a kid, just FYI.
Thanks for clearing that up, Liz.
Yeah. Unpacking those parental money mindsets, it definitely goes on.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about money in this episode and how to talk about money, how to lean in about money. How do you do it? What are your thoughts?
I think it's more that, yeah, I just hope people have learned from this, like if the benefits of talking about money. It's like, yes, it might be scary, but it's like, you know, we're still here, we're still functioning, and we've been talking about money for a few years now. You know, there isn't any, it may seem like there might be negative consequences, but I can guarantee you the positives definitely outweigh the negatives. And for me, I've learned so much about myself having these conversations over the last 2 years. And yeah, like I said, it's like if it kind of feels a bit icky, lean into it and I think you'd be very surprised at the outcome in a positive way. Yeah.
Can I also just add something in there? I think a lot of people shy away from it because they don't want to mess it up. And I've probably been a bad example in this conversation about like, oh no, you can totally mess it up and it's a disaster. Like it's not a disaster and it's salvageable. And I think that if you're sitting there being like, oh God, okay, when I have this conversation about my salary, I've got to say this question and then I need to go to this one. You know, like it'll stress you out and you might not even do it. Like, if, for example, I had a conversation with my parents the other day because they never talk about the idea of splitting bills because their generation just don't talk about it. And they were like, how do we do it? What do we say? And I was like, do you know what? Try this or this or this. And if it doesn't work, try another one next time. Like, I think it's just we're navigating a new space at the moment. So also don't be too, like, this is the first time in history, really, that women have been earning the same amount, if not more, than men or their partners. And so we are kind of reshaping the narrative and creating new dynamics within ourselves and in relationships. And so I think it's just don't shy away from them and don't feel like you've got to get it perfect all the time because not even experts do.
Yeah. And definitely start small as well. Like you don't have to dive in and be like, what's your retirement plan? You can start with what's a money goal or like what's something you enjoyed spending money on this week?
Wow, when it made me feel bad again.
No, I love the fails. It's great. We're not all perfect.
We're all fumbling through our money stories.
Conversations.
I'm a bit guilty of going straight into things and being like, okay, tell me about your mortgage. But I need a reminder too to start small with some people.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for this. This has been great. If people want to learn more about you, where can they find you? And what's your podcast called as well?
It's called The Curve Podcast. If you just search The Curve, like the learning curve, like having lots of curves. We've had some discussions around what the curve actually is meant to be meaning. We had different ideas of that. But yeah, it's the CURVE. So The Curve Podcast. We've got two. We've got one that goes out every Monday, which is like a weekly wrap up of business news, inflation, money, stock market, investing stuff. And then we have a Wednesday episode, which is slightly longer, which is Raising the Curve. And that's interviews with people like Anna. We chatted to her not that long ago and that episode will be coming out soon. And yeah, I mean, we've got a website, thecurve.co.nz, and Instagram, The Curve Platform. But yeah, I think if there's anyone that wants to reach out or learn more, all of our stuff is in our Instagram link, like in the, what's it called? The link tree thing, which is at The Curve Platform.
Amazing.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks
for
having us.
I really enjoyed this combo.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you found this episode helpful, please rate us 5 stars, write a review, or share with a friend. If you're new to investing, make sure to listen to our first 10 episodes. Follow us at Get Rich Slow Club or Tash at Tash Invests or me at Anna Christina.
This show was brought to you by Natasha Etchman, who is an authorized representative, 1299881 of Guideway Financial Services, AFSL 420367. And Perla, who is an authorized representative, 1281540 of Sanlam Private Wealth, AFSL 337927. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to investing. So make sure you check out our financial services guides and read the product disclosure statement and target market determination for any investments you're considering. See our show notes for more info.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.